Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
You're listening to The Takeaway. I'm Shamitha Basu. COVID-19 has forced performing arts theaters across the country to halt productions and close their doors. Broadway has announced it will remain dark until at least the fall. But for smaller arts organizations, the picture is much more dire. Most theaters don't know when they'll be able to reopen to audiences. Many aren't sure they'll be able to stay afloat until then. And the communities that depend on these theaters have, at least temporarily, lost essential spaces for art, education, and simply coming together. But even if theaters are able to reopen within, say, a year, it's far from guaranteed that audience members will be quick to return. A recent poll by the market research company Shugal Research found that only about 36% of theatergoers in the United States think they would go back to their old theater-going routines once performances resume, which means it'll be a long time before many theaters can bring in the level of revenue they were making before the pandemic. And that reality comes on top of cancellations they've already experienced this spring.
The day we shut down was the day our gala was meant to happen. And then the Monday following, we were to begin rehearsals on The Wolves. So we lost a production and a gala.
That's Paige Price, producing artistic director for the Philadelphia Theater Company. In Los Angeles, the country's oldest Asian American theater company, East West Players, was at a similar point in its season. Here's their producing artistic director, Snehal Desai.
The evening we closed, we were about to start previews for The Musical Assassins by Sondheim as part of a citywide celebration for his 90th birthday. And it was also our biggest musical of the year. And then we also were about to launch our Theater for Youth tour, which hits tens of thousands of kids in Southern California. And like Paige, we were weeks away from our gala as well, which had to be canceled as an in-person event.
I spoke with Snehal and Paige about what COVID-19 has meant for their arts communities, as well as how their own employees have been affected financially by these cancellations.
I think the financial impact was, A, what to do with the folks that were on payroll for the show. So we had folks who, once you go into performance mode, who work front of house, who are crew, and those folks are paid in a different way than, say, actors and have different contracts and stuff. And so, mm-hmm. A, it was a decision of how long to pay those folks out. You know, we couldn't, unfortunately, pay them out for the full run, but we were able to pay them out a little bit. And in terms of our full-time employees, we were actually okay because that was our last show of the season. And then we were in our gala season and we had a lot of our gala income in. The trouble we're running into now is our community has been very patient and very gracious about giving us time to see when things will be able to operate again. But as the timeline looks further and further out, now we're getting more calls for refunds. And so it's just a concern of how much we're going to have to kind of return.
Paige, what about for you?
Yeah, we're in a similar position where we waited a little bit because so much was happening so quickly that this week's worst case scenario was next week's best case scenario. So we put everyone on hold. And once it became apparent that the unemployment was going to be generous, we furloughed almost the entire staff and we helped the part-time workers around the front of house. We helped them get some emergency grants that were happening. And then with the actors, we found out when they were available in the fall, which of course now is the best case scenario. Mm-hmm. And so now we're looking at ways that we could possibly do something with the actors online so that we can pay them an equity salary and showcase the play in some way. In fact, we thought we'd even go to the writer and see if there's any kind of work she'd like to do to reimagine it for Zoom, and that way we can pay her something too. So just trying to find ways of closing that loop and giving our ticket holders something to look at. And many of them have donated back. I was pleasantly surprised by the amount, about 58% donated the money back to the theater. But as Snehal also mentions, you know, as the timeline grows further and further away for when we'll gather again, we're just trying to figure out how to stay attached to our community.
And Snail, I know that East West Players has also been thinking about online content, like Paige mentioned. Have you been able to produce or plan anything like that?
We have. We took our time a little bit. It felt overwhelming, the surge of things that went online immediately. And
sure.
So we wanted to see what we could translate. And we have this series called EWP Presents. We have this series called Crazy Talented Asians and another one called Asian AF. And so we've been able to take some of those programs virtual. And it's great. You know, a lot of them have a variety show aspect, multiple singers and comedians and stuff like that. We've been able to take that online once a month. And then we just launched East West Wednesdays, which is kind of like a weekly different conversations with artists in our community. We just had one on Asian American comedians with Margaret Cho and Randall Park and Susie Nakamura. But we also interviewed doctors who were Asian American who were on the front lines to talk about their experiences.
Paige, I know that you've been having conversations with different artistic directors in other places in Philadelphia. What kinds of conversations are you having? And is everyone sort of dealing with the same issues here?
It's really interesting. Philadelphia is like, I was only there for 3 years now. This is the end of my third year. And there's such an enormous community there. And it ranges from individual producing artists to almost, I think we have 7 LORT institutions in the area, which is a lot. And so we started with a couple people and the list has grown. So more than 70 leaders are on this call now. So you can imagine the scope of issues. And they're similar to how do we take care of our artistic community? How do we take care of our staff? What do we do with programming? And I have to say there's a lot of forward motion since the group is so big now, we've broken up into 5 subsets of issues like reentry and sharing resources. And one group is called Dreaming Forward. What are the innovations that might come from this moment? I'm having another conversation with other peers across the country that might involve producing something, and who knows what that looks like. That word is very amorphous at the moment. Making something in Philly that maybe people in Seattle could look at, giving people access to other artistic communities by sharing a platform. And so I'm talking with at least 4 other theaters all over the country about something like that.
Snehal, I'm sure that you've been having similar conversations. You're in LA. I wonder if you're talking to artistic directors at other local theaters in LA or beyond and what you found helpful.
We also have had great leadership from the city and the county. So they have convened kind of working groups to have conversations, and particularly across the performing arts spectrum. So with dance, with music organizations and things like that, since we're all dealing with the same concerns about how to safely bring our artists and our audiences into the building. And the real question that, you know, I think that's been kind of ruminating is what will our audiences also need after all of this? You know, how do we honor the, you know, at this point, it's almost 75,000 Americans who have lost their lives in a very short span of time. And what will that look like? For most theaters, you know, your base audience is actually in the high risk category of individuals above 60. And our traditional income streams of ticket sales, subscriptions, holiday shows, and in-person fundraising events is not going to be reliable for a long time. So as Paige said, it is going to have to be a really hard look at the model, both the business model and the artistic model, to see what is going to serve, you know, our communities in the best way possible. So for us, we also are looking to move outside the building. We're looking to take our work more into, say, the senior homes and things like that, so that we can bring something to communities that have been the hardest hit and we may not be able to see for a while.
Paige, I wonder what kinds of specific conversations you're starting to have about reopening and what that would look like.
Yes. It is really interesting.
That was a telling sigh.
Well, I think that, you know, Snehal started down the road of what kind of emotional state are our artists going to be in, our audience is going to be in. You know, I worry about the sector. You know, we have 55,000 full-time equivalent jobs in Philadelphia. And I sort of think of them as the motherboard that's underneath the city, the cultural motherboard. And if that shorts out, or if we lose a big chunks of it, I fear for the vitality of the city, because we are going to be one of the last businesses to open. We're going to be the last areas of Pennsylvania to open. And so we're just looking at what could we do to the building itself. And we're budgeting structural changes. We know that Actors Equity is going to give us some guidelines for the artists backstage that will be global, which is great that they have somebody on that case. But really, what is it like to walk into a theater and expect to be taken away and have a whole front of a house staff in a mask? You know, but is that comfort inducing? Is that, there's so much unknown that we're just sort of making a different plan every week. But it's starting to become a little bit more clear how many pillars that we're going to have to put up underneath our productions to make people feel safe.
Snehal, I'm sure you have lots of thoughts on what reopening might look like, but I'm also wondering, given the level of xenophobic and racist language that's been used against Asian Americans during this pandemic, has that entered into your thought at all in terms of the mission of your theater going forward?
Yes, I would say every day. I think the hardest thing right now with what we're dealing with is that we understand that humans are a social creature, and we're just not able to have that interaction with each other. And it's going to be a very long time. I think that's a vital part of the services we provide. We are community centers, and the further apart we are, there's an increasing lack of empathy, and there's an increasing rise in the rhetoric. So for us, it's been about making sure our community stays visible, that we speak out against kind of the hateful rhetoric, and that we also educate our community on how to protect itself. But, you know, you cannot deny the significant rise in hate crimes throughout the country. And even in Southern California and in LA, we've seen an increase in incidents on a daily basis. And so for us, it's those things. And then for me down the line, how will I keep my community safe, my patrons and artists as they come back into our space?
Mm-hmm. Some theaters have already announced that they've had to make the difficult decision to close their doors permanently due to financial pressures from COVID-19. I'm wondering to both of you, what would the loss of live theater mean in your respective communities? Maybe Paige, can you start?
You know, I don't believe that live theater will go away. I'm not there yet. I mean, I certainly think that there's an expectation that theater will thrive in some form. It's been around, you know, somebody I hear on your Zoom call to the communities now, maybe it was Michael Ritchie, mentioned that it was the second oldest profession in the world. So I'm on that
camp.
I think it's going to stick around for a while. It just might look differently. And, you know, if I'm really honest, I think that there was a subscription model in many parts of our institutional theater models that needed a good look. And, you know, if we need to take this time to correct and to rethink, I'm trying to look at what that might bring to us to keep our art form vital. But I can't imagine not having live theater. I just can't.
Yeah, I just want to concur with Paige. I think we will survive. And I think, you know, we're in a period, as I say, of forced innovation. And many of the things that our sector has put off in terms of bringing things online and virtual experiences and stuff, we're doing, and we're doing in a much faster way, and we're becoming much more nimble organizations. For East West, we are the largest and oldest Asian American theater, but we're also the longest running theater of color in this country. So I feel like we have a significant role to play in the ecosystem of theater, but also both locally and nationally. And so, like many things, we have persevered and we'll find a way. And it may not look like what we were, what we imagined, but, you know, I think it's important to have a stage from which to tell our stories.
Snehal Desai is the producing artistic director of East West Players in Los Angeles, and Paige Price is the producing artistic director for the Philadelphia Theater Company. Thank you both so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We've also been hearing from you about how arts institutions in your communities are being affected by the pandemic and why that matters.
I'm worried about the Oregon Shakespeare Festival. They will have no 2020 season. On top of that, wildfires in Southern Oregon last year deeply impacted their bottom line. I worry about whether the theater will survive, and I worry about the livelihood of the artists, hotel, and restaurant workers who rely on its success. This is Patty Farrell from Portland, Oregon.
Hey, this is John Cooper. I'm calling from Longmont, Colorado, just north of Denver. Losing our arts and culture would be awful. Hundreds of thousands of people over decades have worked and struggled and volunteered and donated to build these places, and they contribute so much more to society than many people think they do. I think it would be a tragedy to lose them.
This is Hannah. I live in New York City. I work on Broadway. The local arts and culture institutions are my community. If we lose them, even just for a long enough hiatus, a large portion of my family will leave my community forever, either get jobs in other fields that are able to reopen or else physically relocate. Losing my arts and culture institutions means losing my community, full stop.
Erica Pock, Peoria, Illinois. We are doing virtual tours of galleries, and we are doing massive amounts of fundraising for our two community theaters. This would be a horrible loss for our community, considering one of our community theaters is the fourth longest running in the nation.
Hi, this is Bill from Long Beach, Washington. The music venue my wife and I have is closed right now, as are all the theaters and art galleries in town. We've been doing open mics and local artist concerts on Zoom. The sound quality isn't great for most people, but it beats no music at all. The arts are a real important part of the community here on the Long Beach Peninsula, and so everybody is more than determined to get it going again.
Hi, my name is Cindy Henry. I'm from Portsmouth, New Hampshire. Unfortunately, they canceled the Prescott Park Music Festival, which happens all summer and brings amazing artists to the community and really great theater for kids. It's definitely going to take a toll on the local economy and basically the morale of the community, because we love summer in New England. We hope that they bounce back, and we're going to figure out ways to support them throughout the summer.